This is the New World of Transition. It's presented by us from the Queen's DD Council and Interagency Council. We did a partnership, and it's regarding adult transition for kids aging out of the schools. I'm Josie DeVitti. I'm the co-chair of the Adult Day Services Committee. I also work for, I'm the director of QCP Day Services. We have Wendy Schoenfeld from LifeSpy. She's also the co-chair of the Adult Transition Committees. We have Beth Altman from, she's the transition team leader for P811Q for District 75. And we also have Winnie Schiff, who is the Associate Executive Director for Legislative Affairs from the Interagency Council of Developmental Disabilities. Welcome all. We will be your presenters today. Just a couple of side notes. Please keep your cameras off. If you have any questions, please put them in the chat. We will get to them at the end of the presentation, and we will answer all questions, I promise you. If not, we leave your email address and we will get back to you on your email address. And also, besides your cameras, if you can mute yourselves, would be great. Thank you. Beth will start us off with an overview of transition.
Wendy? Hey, what is transition? The term transition refers to the planning and services that are needed and mandated by federal and state law to prepare youth with disabilities to move smoothly from school to adult living. This process includes instruction, community learning experiences, and other support services that will enable these young adults to develop skills, knowledge, and abilities to address post-school living, learning, and working needs. It may also include assistance in making many applications needed prior to leaving school for community agencies, such as those that assist with the rehabilitation programs or supported employment programs or even government benefits. The transition process is a coordinated set of activities designed to help the students move slowly from school to adult life. Here in New York State, this process formally begins during the year that the student is turning 15. Most of the schools have a transition team leader or a guidance counselor to assist in the transition process. Transition planning is part of the IEP and will be reviewed every year. So, you know, simply, transition is a life plan for change, and it's a joint effort that's mandated by law. The transition process focuses on the student's dreams and hopes and aspirations by using person-centered planning techniques. That means it's all about the individual. The young adult who's, you know, the student should always be invited to the annual meetings. All interested parties and agency representatives should be invited to take part in these planning sessions with the consent of the family. Early planning is essential because there is no guarantee of a job, adult day program, vocational training program, or other services once the student leaves school. Now, if your child is in school, they are automatically entitled to an education. You don't have to do anything to access those services. When the young adult moves into other government services that are funded through the state, you have to prove that eligibility. And there are a lot of steps that the family must take in order to go through that process of eligibility. So early planning provides more time to explore options and alternatives with representatives from your son or daughter's school and outside agencies. It will assist in your young adult in receiving the appropriate services upon transitioning from the New York City Department of Education, you know, and into the adult world. Early planning is essential. It will identify the skills to be developed, such as more independent living skills, learning to travel, learning how to interact socially, that will help lead to greater independence and participation in the community for the person. Participation of all parties at planning meetings helps to focus on the person's needs. At the first transition meeting, this may be the first time that your child has been included in the meeting, and that's standard practice that we are required to do. Planning will help relieve the anxiety for the family when they know that they have a set step, you know, steps that to follow in order to follow through on the planning. Transition services include instructional activities, community integration, collaboration with adult service agencies, post-high school options, and independent living skills. Other types of transition. Some individuals may go from school age to college, from one type of day habilitation program to another. If your child leaves school and goes into one program, they don't have to stay there for the rest of their life. They may gain and develop skills and move on to a less, restrictive environment, or they may change their mind and decide they want to be in another program. They can go from day hab to a senior program, you know, a long time down the road, different agencies. And transition could also mean moving from your family's residence to a group residence. It can even mean transitioning from a pediatrician to a general practitioner, which many families aren't aware they need to do when their son or daughter turns 21.
Thank you, Beth, for our overview of transition. Very informative. So there's a lot going on with in regards to transition, and it's very important for the families to be involved and to make sure they contact all their transition team leaders to ensure that they do receive the services that they are looking for. Next, we have Winnie to talk about OPWDD.
Hi, everybody. Well, OPWDD is the state agency that oversees all services for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. And they also, the funding flows through OPWDD for all programs and services. They provide their own state-run services, and that includes day programs. And they also fund the not-for-profits that provide most of the services to people in New York State. The commissioner of OPWDD is, you know, works very closely with, well, there's a big staff of people at OPWDD to oversee all of the things that they do. It's one of the offices that the governor's office controls. And so they work very closely with the governor's office. In fact, they take all of their direction from the governor's office. Over 95% of the money that goes to services for people is paid by Medicaid. And the rest of it would be state funding that doesn't have a federal match. Medicaid money has a 50% federal match. So that's why there's such the greatest volume of services provided comes under the Medicaid category, because New York State then only has to pay for half of the cost of those services. The last thing I want to just say before moving on to what adult services are available is that way back before my time, there was one office of mental hygiene, and that split into three categories, which was Office for People with Developmental Disabilities. It was called something else then, but the Office of Mental Health and the Office for Alcoholism and Substance Abuse Services. The split was a very good thing because it allowed us to have our very own office that represented us and really understood the needs of people with IDD and could, you know, help us fund and design programs that would be the best for everybody. For various reasons that I won't go into detail on, we are more on our own now with OPWDD than we have been before. It used to be a real partnership, and that is not as much the case right now. So all of us working together to make sure that things continue the way we want them and change in ways that make sense for people receiving services and their families, very, very important. And now I'd like to turn it over to Josie.
Thank you, Winnie, for our overview. So what adult services are available? There are many different types, and depending on your person and their interests and their needs would depend on the type of service that they should apply for. We have rehabilitation services, which now, as you all know, in this trying times due to COVID-19, we're offering different types of services. So up until at least until March, we're hoping after March it'll continue. There'll be a blended type services. You could either be in person, or you could do remote learning, or you could do a combination of both. Many of the agencies offer different options, so you would have to contact your individual agencies to see what they are offering at this given time. And things are changing, and you'll hear later in our reimagining and the reopening adult day services that Winnie will be discussing, of how things have changed and evolved over the past 8 months. We also have a rehabilitation without walls, community pre-vocational services. Again, it's both blended in-person and remote learning. We have a pathway to employment, employment training program, which is also known as ETP, supported employment, innovative programs such as self-directed services, which many families are already enrolled in, community rehabilitation, respite, recreation, environmental modifications, family reimbursement, summer camp, and after school. I will be going in depth a little bit of giving you kind of an overview of what these services are. Rehabilitation basically provides a range of supervised experiences in the community. Rehab programs are designed to meet the individual's needs. They learn functional skills, money, food preparation, and computer technology. The good thing about rehab, it's based on the person. So what the person wants is what how the program is designed. So for instance, say the person wants to learn computers, we'll design the program around the person. Maybe they'll go to the library, maybe they'll go to an office and see what types of jobs are available or see how to work computers. So, and we do that through a variety of settings. We do it through volunteer sites in the local community. We teach them self-advocacy in the community. We teach them computer technology. We teach them travel and safety skills. And then we prepare for the possibility of employment if it matches the individual skills and interests. And many programs also, many rehabilitation programs also offer horticulture, cooking skills, basic independent living skills to help the person live more independently in the future. And it really is based on their needs and what they like to do and what they want to do and where they see themselves in the future. We also have community pre-vocational services, which prepares individuals for employment or independent volunteer opportunities. Services include the teaching of skills for employment, such as attending to tasks, task completion, or problem solving and safety. Individuals work on services that meet their own goals. And many of these programs, the good thing about OPW and the waiver services, many of these programs can be done together. So you could be in community pre-voc and rehab, or you could be in rehab and supported employment. So it's kind of a good, you could get different options for the person depending on what they actually want and need, which is good. Supported employment is another option. Programs are designed to enable adults who have a developmental disability to secure and maintain gainful employment in the community with the support of a job coach. Services include vocational testing and assessment. Individuals must be travel trained and are then route trained to their individual work sites. Services bridge the gap from school to actively functioning in the world of competitive employment. Many of these jobs are based on what the person needs and wants. Again, it's all person-centered. So they may want to work in a Stop and Shop near their house. So they're trained in certain skills. They get a job coach who helps them with these skills. And then they work independently at these sites. other types of services, innovative services. Well, we spoke about They Have Without Walls, an employment training program. And this program is an employment initiative through OPWDD. Then self-directed. Many of you have attended self-directed services. Maybe you already have it. And this is where the individual has a disability, has the right to make a choice. This program revolves around this concept and is entirely person-centered. A circle of support is chosen by the person and the family to meet the individual's needs. The person has control of their own life and their own money. They would have a fiscal intermediary, who they help contract with the different agencies that and the different services that the person needs. Then we also have Pathway to Employment, which is a person-centered comprehensive employment planning and support service that engages individuals in identifying a career direction, provides instruction and training in pre-employment skills, and develops a plan for achieving competitive integrated employment at or above minimum wage. And many of these programs are offered by many different agencies, which we'll get into later. And you would actually be evaluated by the person. So I'm going to go into the steps to take with OPWDD to how to access these types of services. Basically, everyone needs a psychological, psychosocial, and a medical evaluation. Every person must have Medicaid. If you do not have Medicaid, you can talk with the clinics or different care managers that help you obtain Medicaid. Many agencies offer non-Medicaid case management, and they will assist you in getting Medicaid for your person. You have to apply for OPWDD eligibility. We recommend that you go through your transition team leaders to assist you with the eligibility. So the process is done according to the regulations of OPWDD, and there is no delay in your enrollment into OPWDD. So if you need to contact your service coordinator or your care manager, and also contact your transition team leader to assist you in obtaining eligibility. You must attend the front door information session if you haven't done so already. Scheduled virtually on a monthly basis in English and Spanish. You contact the front door intake line, 718-217-6485, once eligibility has been determined. You apply for care management through a care coordination organization or non-Medicaid case management agencies. Right now, the care coordination agencies that are available are Tri-County, ACA, and Care Design. And you could apply through them to assist with getting you a care manager. For all of our programs, you must have a care manager. It is very important. That person is kind of the gatekeeper. They oversee your whole program. They write your plans. They help you get services. They assist you with problems. They help you get your evaluations. They really are a good resource for a family to have, and it's a requirement. Yet you should research OPWDD services and programs with the school transition team. Well, in the past, we used to have in-person intakes, but now many of the agencies are doing virtual intakes. So they will show you the programs. They will, some on a limited basis, will have you come into the programs to see what the program is. But as we all know, things have changed. So things may look different than they did 6 or 8 months ago. So hopefully within the next couple of months, it will get back to where it was, or at least similar. You should research adult day service programs before the child's last year with the Department of Education. Ask if the agency will schedule in-person visits. This is just a slide regarding Region 4 front door webinars. The sessions basically last about an hour and a half. Please register no later than 3 days before the webinar. You must register with your borough. I'll leave this up for a couple of minutes if anybody wants to take a picture of it. You should have your following information: your name, your date of birth, your home address of the applicant, phone numbers, email the participant, and their relationship to the applicant. The webinars are offered in both English and Spanish. As you can see, I have the dates up here. So please register, have that under your belt so that the whole process, if it has not done so already, can begin. Thank you. Now Beth will come and she will do the next section.
All right, okay. Wendy, you wanna switch? Okay. Steps to obtaining adult services. It is very, very important to maintain contact with your care manager. You have to work with your care manager, decide on what service you think is appropriate for your son or daughter, and share that information. There is very specific paperwork that must be submitted to the state in order for your son or daughter to attend any program. And that is generally submitted by the care manager. All of that paperwork has to be transmitted to the agency, and the family, care manager, and school should work together. If you find a program you like, notify the transition staff at your school. We have contacts at many of the different agencies, and we may be able to help facilitate tours, visits, or track paperwork that may be missing. Next. Steps to obtain adult services. The placement process must be a collaboration between the young adult, the family, the school, the new program, and the care manager. Everyone has to do their part, and we all have to check and make sure, you know, what step we are in the process, because it can be rather lengthy and time consuming. Everyone is a very important part of this service for anyone that's transitioning from the Department of Education. There are many documents that are going to be needed by the adult day program, and the school does not have access to the computer system that is needed to share this information. This is completely under the care coordination organizations that the care managers work for, and they have to ensure that those approvals are received from OPWDD and that documents are uploaded. So that's why that communication is so important. You know, and I know that in this time, please be mindful, the care managers have very high caseloads, and sometimes there are changes in personnel. So if you're not able to get in touch with someone, just take that next step and contact the agency and find out and make sure that, you know, you still have the same care manager, and, you know, that can be followed up on by the CCO. A lot of documents. I recommend that the families keep a file with all of the paperwork and copies of things related to OPWDD, care management, IEPs, you know, even if you put it in a shoebox or a manila folder, just so you have all of those documents at hand. This will be posted. I'm not going to read every single one of them, but just, you know, photo ID is going to be very important. So I want to make sure. And to please, please check to see if the evaluations that you may have done a long time ago need to be updated, because very frequently when someone is attending an adult program for the first time, they may need to have those evaluations repeated, and you may have to schedule new appointments. And in this climate, it may take a little bit longer to get an appointment and to get the reports back. So please be mindful of that, okay? Other documents that may be needed, they may want more information from your son or daughter's doctor, especially if there are any secondary conditions that they may think are pertinent for the day program. The most recent IEP, if you can't find it, your school can always help you with that. If your child has an additional psychiatric diagnosis, they may ask for a copy of that. And any other consents, and like I said, the New York State non-driver ID or passport, that's for the photo ID. So it's a good time to think about getting that New York State non-driver ID or NYC ID at this time. Applying for benefits. This is often one of the most important steps in transitioning. Some people were receiving benefits from Social Security since they were a child because of the family income. But other individuals apply for the first time when they turn 18 because the family's income is not considered any longer. If someone is approved for SSI, they're automatically going to be approved for Medicaid, and you may not need to do a separate application. You must be Medicaid enrolled with the appropriate code to fund the services for adults, you know, through OPWDD. So sometimes there have to be changes made in order to access those services. And it's just, you know, one more reason to start early. And the list of the documents that you're going to need for SSI and Medicaid are, you know, going to be the same as for the programs: birth certificate, family income, photo ID, medical form with diagnosis, the psychological and psychosocial. I know you're going to hear us repeat those a lot, but it's very, very important because you're going to need those same documents for many different things. And now Josie's going to talk about the guidebooks.
Why, thank you, Beth. Yes, again, very important. We can't say it enough. In order to get your person enrolled in one of our programs, they have to have Medicaid, and it has to be the correct type of Medicaid. So you would have to talk to your care manager or your non-Medicaid care manager to help you decide what and apply for the correct Medicaid. Psychological, we need a psychological. Psychosocial, we need a psychosocial, has to be within a year, a psychological within 3 years, and a medical within a year. Part of being part of the medical, you also need a tuberculosis test or a QuantiFERON test, which is very important. If you get the QuantiFERON, which is a blood test to test for TB, you only need that within the last year. But if you decide to get the injection for the TB test, your son or daughter or your person will need 2 TB tests. So just keep that in mind when you are scheduling the medical for your person. In regards to the guides, we have two guides that will be on our websites. Right here, you'll see it's on the Queens Council on Developmental Disabilities. This is OPWDD's Council for the Borough of Queens, who's sponsoring this workshop and actually this whole family support. And that website is www.qcddny.org. And the two guides are very important. First of all, you have the adult transition guide, which is all the day programs in Queens. It gives you a little description of the program. There's contact information, intake numbers, where they're located. So please access that through OPWDD. The QCDD website. The family support guide is awesome. Also an awesome guide for you to use. This has all your other services that your family support services that do come in handy and that you may need access to. So please, again, you can access that on the qcddny.org website. Or if you talk to your transition team leaders, they can either send you email you a copy of it, or we do have hard copies. So if anyone needs hard copies, please put it into the chat and we will get you those guides as well. Thank you. And as you can see here, technology and transition, these are just some other websites that will assist you with planning with the future. Here's the Social Security information, HRA, Access VR, New York State OPWDD. I suggest that you definitely go on the OPWDD website. It offers a lot of information for families and providers as well, but they really are up to date with what is going on. And also there's the District 75 website that can be, that can keep you up to date on activities going on through District 75. Now, Winnie will talk about reimagining and reopening of adult day services.
Thanks, Josie. So what I wanna do is give you a mini, run through the mini history that we've all lived through since mid-March, because it'll help to talk about all the rest if we have all of the short-term history in mind. We are pretty stuck in the now normal, which is going to last for quite a while before we get to our new normal. And you know, I know you've heard and have imagined yourself that things are never going to look the same, exactly the same as they had before COVID. But during this time where the virus is still with us and we're experiencing some microclusters that New York State is trying to get a handle on, I think I saw that 95% this morning, 95% of the other of the states in the United States, we have a travel ban for, including all of our neighboring states, although we're not banning travel because it would just be too impossible since people drive over the border every day for various reasons. But until we get a vaccine, which is going to be, you know, first of all, it has to be safe and then it has to be available. And then it looks like everyone has to have two doses. And it's going to be quite a while that we're wearing masks, we're being careful, and we're in the now normal while we get to the new one. So first of all, we know more about COVID than we ever did before. We know how it spreads. And it looks like it's way more of an airborne problem than a surface infection problem. So that means it's in the air and being indoors is a little dicey unless we take a lot of precautions. Who is vulnerable? Anybody who is next to another person. I mean, so the larger the crowd, the higher your chances are for becoming sick. And if we have secondary conditions, which if you have, you know, asthma or some other more serious condition, is really a risk. But even if you just have high blood pressure or you're a little bit older or, you know, so many different reasons that our risk is increased for becoming very sick with COVID. How do we prevent it? We wear masks and we have all kinds of contraptions to clean the air, ultraviolet light and HEPA filters with high qualifications. And of course, we're continuing with all of the disinfection of surfaces, but like I said, that appears to be less of a transmission risk than the air itself. People have lost jobs. Our economy has been damaged. Because of that, taxes have not been collected by the state. The state deficit is now $14.5 billion, and that's just for this year. They're projecting that it gets worse and worse as the years go out. Programs were closed. Schools were closed. All of us were on lockdown. So we got some stimulus help from the federal government, as you all also know. I don't know the latest on what's happening with the fourth stimulus package. We absolutely need it. And if that one doesn't contain state and local government help, we are going to experience additional cuts in the very near future. It appears right now that no fourth package is going to be passed prior to Election Day, which is obviously around the corner. And I hope everybody voted, but we'll talk about that later. The package that they're looking at right now has $1.8 trillion behind it with $300 billion for state and local governments. I don't know if that's enough to take care of our deficit. We may very well experience some cuts even if we get that money for state government. For providers, there was COVID-related increases that, you know, from the federal government, but we actually didn't see any of that. It was intended to go for PPE, which are masks and all that other stuff, and also for COVID-related expenses like hazard pay for staff, but none of that has been distributed to nonprofit entities at all in New York State, although we're trying to get that to happen. And I'll talk more about that in a minute too. So providers lost a lot of money. when programs closed. We were really on our own to try to figure out what to do, except that a couple things were done for us, thank goodness. One first was retainer payments for day programs, and OPWDD and the federal government allowed day programs to bill so that we could keep our doors open, keep our staff on, so that we could have people to provide remote and virtual services to people in their homes. And then after that ended, which was after 90 days, they gave us some modified billing units. So dayhab is usually 2 hours and 4 hours, 2 hours for a half day and 4 hours for a full day. We were allowed to provide 1 hour and 2 hours of service to get the half unit and full unit billing, which also kept programs going. That has ended as well. So providers are really struggling right now to continue to provide services and to be there for everybody who needs them. But we have reopened. And I wanna take a 10 years step back to tell you that going into COVID, providers had received no increases for about 10 years and some cuts. So staff salaries were very low, and we ended up starting an initiative called Be Fair to Direct Care. And that was to increase the salaries of direct support professionals. We were somewhat successful with that. And about two thirds of the way through that initiative, we realized agencies had so little cash on hand that they were going to be closing their doors, and there wouldn't even be jobs for people if we could pay them good salaries. So we started a new initiative to try to get what would be sort of like a cost of living increase every year for 5 years. And then right in the middle of that, COVID hit us. So we had very little cash on hand to make it through this terrible pandemic. Our staff is still fairly poorly paid, although they're very dedicated and we're grateful for that. And we had all these additional expenses because of COVID that we didn't receive any additional money for. And now they're proposing some cuts that took place on October 1st, although they haven't been implemented yet. So it'll be retroactive though to October 1st. And there's also a 20% withhold on state only paid services. In the beginning, I had told you that probably it's more like over 90% of our services are paid by Medicaid. That portion that isn't has a 20% temporary cut, and they're calling it a withhold. And that is true if we get that federal funding to take care of the state budget. If we don't, then that 20% will likely become permanent, and there'll be additional cuts as well. So necessity is the mother of invention, and we switched to virtual services, and we were luckily given the flexibility to provide day services in various locations. And all that is continuing, thank goodness, so that we can continue to support people. And what the adult day providers who are members of IAC did is we got together and we put together a white paper, and we shared it with OPWDD to tell them what we, you know, kind of best practices, what we needed to do in order to keep people safe and keep providing services, and what we need for them to do in order to allow us to continue to do that. So the paper, which we can also make available to you if you'd like to see it, is a bunch of recommendations for providers and also families. And then, like I said, recommendations for OPWDD to make some changes so that we can do really good work going forward in the now normal and the new normal that hopefully will come soon. So the paper covers infection control, obviously, because that's the thing that we have to get really good at in order to be able to continue to provide services to people, especially in person in our buildings. And I'm happy to say that we really haven't had any spread of infection in our day programs. So all of the precautions are being taken and they're working. We have isolation rooms. So if anybody has like even a sore throat or a sniffle, people are asked to stay in the isolation room. We take temperatures, you know, we're doing everything that is required and then some to keep people safe, and it's working. So, you know, don't be afraid to send your loved one back to program or have them start. communication is so important with providers, and everybody has reopening plans that are on their websites. You can take a virtual walkthrough. We can talk more about that later as well. The other thing that we considered is supporting individuals returning to programs. So all of a sudden programs closed and everybody's home, and months go by and, you know, people lose some skills, they become frustrated, maybe a little lazy. I know it happened to me a little. You know, so we need to support people in getting back to programs. And that also applies to students who weren't able to continue going to school. Transportation, a huge issue. We really relied on transportation to get people to their programs and to activities while they were at program. And now there's big restrictions on transportation because of the fear of infection that we need to continue in order to keep people safe. So transportation remains a problem. We're trying to be as creative as we can. Support for families. We know that when you're home, trying to work at home with kids home from school, it's really hard. I mean, we're all living through this, and people need extra support at home, and providers are doing the best they can to provide, you know, different kinds of services that are funded through different program types to suit people's needs. I think Josie and Beth and Wendy were all talking about person-centered services, and obviously this is key. Maintaining services. This section was for OPWDD. We talked about the financial and regulatory changes that really should happen in order for us to continue to stay open, provide good services with all of the additional expenses. And then also take into account that the remote and virtual learning has been really a great thing that we want to continue in a blended way, so that some things should be continued in a virtually, but obviously we also need in-person services as well. Program modifications, that's again for providers, and it really talks a lot about things that need to be considered in taking people back to programs. We have fewer opportunities in the community these days than we had once for many reasons, and so we need to be flexible. Staffing and staff training. Staff have to be absolutely up to date on infection control and what to do if they notice something. And all the whole virtual opportunity to get together requires actually a lot of knowledge and skill. So staff need training in that as well. Entry services. We're trying to be as flexible and collaborative as possible and to have some stuff done virtually and maybe a bigger role for providers just to smooth the process. And of course, blending virtual and face-to-face services. And we have, I think there's 3.5 pages of suggestions that are really creative and excellent for the virtual and face-to-face blended services. What I wanted to also tell you is that we realized that students transitioning, or I should say, you know, leaving school and trying to enter adult day services these days are really having a difficult time. So we put together another group called Transition for the Class of 2020, and it might be really hard for the class of 2021 too. So we're probably gonna keep this group going. We'll just have to change the name when the year changes. But we're looking at trying to get a handle on every single student and where they're at in the transition process. Do they have all the documents that we talked about before? Have they been able to get evaluations, because there are fewer of those available in face-to-face now? And then once all of that is done, how do they get connected with adult service providers and find out what's available? And like I said, do those virtual tours and begin to get connected with a whole new group of people. Leaving school is scary, and we want to try to make it as easy as possible. So very briefly, and then we'll take questions. Let me see what time it is. Okay. There's lots of ways to advocate for OPWDD, the governor, and the federal government to support our services so that we can continue doing the good things together that we've been able to do. There was a great car rally in various parts of the state. They came all the way up from Long Island and some around the Capitol in Albany, and we were at Willowbrook on Staten Island and in other places as well. And that was really fun and effective. We got lots of media attention, and that is the really important thing, to get noticed by the governor. And he is the one who needs to see that we need his help. We've got one-click letters. They're very, very simple. And we can make the links for those available to you as well. There's also, and families are really getting involved these days, which is wonderful. And organizations like IAC, where I work, are supporting all of the family efforts. There's an e-card, because, you know, with COVID, it's tough to be doing things in person. There's also a change.org petition that you can sign. We are, even though it's hard, going to be doing an on-foot rally in front of the governor's office on November 17th. So everybody's welcome to join, and we'll make information about that available the moment it is available. It isn't yet. This is a family initiative also. We're going to have a rope with knots every 6 feet, and everybody will have to wear masks. And if you don't feel comfortable being out there on foot, we're also going to be driving around 3rd Avenue, the building there at 633 3rd Avenue where the governor's office is, and he spends lots of his time there. There'll also be a social media campaign that's going to be fun around Thanksgiving, and we'll tell you about that. And that's it. We're all in this together, and we're going to keep going, moving forward. Questions or last comments maybe from any of my co-presenters?
Well, thank you, Winnie. That was very thorough, and you touched on a lot of the subjects that really have been plaguing all of us. And I'm glad you discussed about just the future of the program and where we were before, where we're going. It was really thorough, for especially even regarding COVID and giving us the update on that. That was really good and informative to everyone, I know. So now we want to move into the questions. We have both questions from our chat. If it's not working, we could all.
Yeah, we don't have any questions in the chat, so I think we should go with live questions.
Okay, perfect. Perfect, perfect. So let me stop sharing screen. Hold on a second. We don't need that anymore. Okay. So does anyone have any questions? Unmute yourself. If not, if you raise your hand, we could unmute you. Any comments or anything? Also, we covered everything. Beth, you wanna?
I apologize to the sign language interpreter. I know I spoke so quickly. That probably was difficult, and I'm sorry.
I just want to share that among the different agencies, there are different techniques and services available at the various programs. So the best way to find out if a program that you may be interested in has a in-person service or a virtual service or whatever model mix you may be looking for is to contact them directly, you know, because that is changing, you know, sometimes just week to week, you know, as everything, you know, plays out.
And again, please contact the different agencies to see what type of services they are offering, to see if they are doing virtual tours.
We have someone with a hand raised.
Yes, we do.
Okay. Mary, do you want to unmute?
Yeah, there I am. Thanks, guys. Quick question. Is there a limitation, someone asked me, about how many people can ride the bus to an adult program?
Buses have to be at 50% capacity. So it depends on the size of the bus, you know?
Right. Okay.
Thanks. And it also depends where they're coming. If they're coming like with their own residence, then they all could come together on a bus.
That's right.
So it really depends on what, who's coming and where they're coming from. And okay.
Also, buses can't make drop-offs at multiple locations. So one bus is for one day program. So it's just a little more complicated all around, but right, if they all live in a residence together, they can all travel together.
The good thing that many of our agencies are doing, and again, like Wendy said, we all have reopening plans on our websites, is that if you come in with a group of people, say from Corona, you stay with those people all day. So in our programs, we don't mix and match. Usually we keep our guys, whoever come in together, if you're independent, you come in together and you stay with those people throughout the whole day. There's no roaming through the buildings. There's no, you stay with them and all your programming is done with those people, which has helped keep the spread down. As Winnie said earlier, many of our day programs, knock wood, are doing very well in that we are keeping a close knit. We are constantly cleaning, constantly monitoring everybody. So it's absolutely has been helping all of us.
And I find that many families are looking for programs that are closer to their geographic neighborhoods so as to limit the time spent on transportation.
Exactly. What we've also been having, a lot of the families, I know some can and some cannot, have been dropping off their individuals, which has helped tremendously because they pick them up, they stay the 4 hours and then they leave. Many agencies do not provide, are not offering lunch. Some of them do, but some of them don't. One good thing that we got in this whole thing, which I know Winnie and the group really were very instrumental in getting it, we finally have lunch included in our 4 hours. So it's in the billing part. So that actually is a very good thing.
Right, I drop my son off and pick him up. And my viewpoint is since I'm able to do that and I have that flexibility, it allows one extra person to ride the bus.
Thank you. That is very helpful.
Both of us appreciate this day program opening, you know, both him and I.
That's an excellent point. Thank you for saying that, because I'm going to see if that will help some of our families as well. Thank you.
And if families do hear, because a lot of our individuals, they talk to each other, the families talk to each other, and they kind of like, you be the guinea pig, and you come in first and see how it. That's how I know I've heard. And once they talk to each other, we do get more people who do want to come in. Absolutely.
I have to say that my daughter wanted to go back to school the moment she could, and I asked her not to. and because virtual was not working for us, but we talked to the school, and I also wanted, you know, other people to try it first. I wanted the schools to figure out the procedures and the isolation room and all that stuff before my daughter would need to be there. And again, you know, so successful so far. I was really thrilled. So she went back this Monday, and we get reports from all of our providers that the people in programs are so happy to see each other. I mean, it's just like the greatest thing in the world. So everybody's happy that we're reopening, and we just have to keep the infection down.
And I think what some of us have also been doing, those people who come back, they go on Zoom groups with those at home. So we're trying to at least hook them up that way. And which is helped. Definitely has helped the families.
Yes, that definitely worked for us too. A little peer pressure. Hey, I'm here. Come on, join me. But they did keep up the guys that don't want to come. They get to still see their friends via Zoom.
Any other questions? We're all cool. We finished early. I'm sorry.
Hi, good morning. Ms. Maria Osuna, excuse me, if interpreter Spanish, please.
We do have a Spanish interpreter, I believe. Are you there? Let's see.
She is. Hold on.
Okay, there's something in the chat.
Yes.
Yeah. Hold on, I'm sorry, hold on. There is a statement in the chat in Spanish regarding okay.
We'll get back to her.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm gonna go through the interpreter.
Okay. We will get back to you, sorry.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Someone's asking to share the slides, the PowerPoint?
Yes, I believe they will be on the QCDD website along with the transition guide and the family support guide. If anyone needs them sooner, you can email me. I can give you my email address. And it is jdavide, D-A-V-I-D-E, at queencp.org. I will put it in the chat, but for some reason, you guys don't see my chats. But Pat will put my email address up there, actually. Thank you, Pat. Anything else? Any other questions regarding eligibility, regarding level of care, notice of decision? Okay, so again, this presentation will be available on the website. It has been recorded. So it will be available for future. But again, you can just email us and we will get back to you if you have any questions. I want to thank my co-hosts. You guys are wonderful and very knowledgeable. Thank you. This was good.
Thank you, everyone.
And I want to thank my co-hosts and everybody for joining us. Thanks.
Great. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
How are we getting